Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today I'm proud to bring you the Satori Dialogues with Serpentis Satori. Greetings, Satori. How are you this morning?
I got a very interesting sign. One of my witches I keep an eye on posted a Sunday video when she normally posts on Friday. And halfway through her video, she talks about one of her intentions for the new year is to read a rune every day.
Oh, wow.
So we had been discussing this topic anyway, but that's one of my confirmations about this topic.
I got a
synchronicities too, especially since I well, there's also Hearth Witch's live stream, which is also useful if I haven't decided on a topic, because something will annoy her that is outside her witchy sphere.
Uh-huh.
And then I'll go like, yeah, I should answer her question.
That's interesting.
Well,
I had a synchronicity too. I rarely ask for signs, but sometimes I do, you know, to save myself a lot of time if I'm headed in the wrong direction. So I asked for a sign about my primal vision and certain events that are currently unfolding. And within a couple of days, a really huge bullhorn, not an electronic one, but an actual bull's horn came into my possession. So my primal vision centers around me going to an abandoned altar, picking up a bull's horn, and then blowing into it. So that was a pretty incredible synchronicity. And then some dreams I've had lately, too, immediately they echoed in my external world through dialogue of people that had nothing to do with me or my dream. So I've had a lot of those lately, too. So I'm glad that you're having them as well.
Which takes us to our topic. We are going to do magical alphabets because I'm using this as the membrane we're passing through from the Greek-ish traditions to the Hebrew-ish traditions that all get gumboed in together and become medieval Hermeticism.
Okay.
Because we're really talking about Sefer Yetzirah, which is one of the oldest books there is, and it's the book on how to make golems. It's about permutating the Hebrew alphabet. But since you are not a professional level tarot reader and only have fairly basic knowledge of the tarot, in the tarot, the 22 level letters of the Hebrew alphabet represent the trumps, which are the main cards, which is the hero's journey in the tarot.
Uh-huh.
In Sefer Yetzirah, you do something called permutating the letters, which is you connect every letter to every other letter, and you meditate on that, and so on and so on and so on. The most easy example is Aleph Bet Aleph is Abba, which is father, and that's the first real word you get when you permutate letters three times, and
okay,
so on and so on and so on. And as we said in the last episode, my theory about where the names of the aeons came from, as well as the names of the archons, probably was guys doing the Sefer Yetzirah thing with the Greek alphabet, which explains why so many of those words in the aeons and archons are just strange.
Uh-huh.
They're not exactly nonsense, but they're not exactly, you know, that word means shovel, that word means cart. A lot of the eons and archon names are really, really weird. So my theory has always been that they had access to Sefer Yetzirah one way or another, and they just borrowed the methodology and used the Greek alphabet to create all of those words. And after 100 or 200 years of practice, those stuck because those worked for the people they worked for.
I'm currently investigating things like that. And again, as you point out, I'm not the professional tarot reader, nor am I proficient with the Hebrew alphabet. But I'm very good at finding the energy or the entity behind the cultural guises. And my ancestors did this, so-called interpretatio. Wherever they go, they'd figure, oh, okay, muscle guy, Hercules, king who hurls thunderbolts, Zeus, beautiful love and sex goddess with war sometimes, Aphrodite. So that's my particular skill. So I'm tackling those questions right now, and it's been a very interesting ride so far.
Well, because that's also part of Hermeticism isn't just grimoire, because we absorbed both the Greek language version of the alphabet game and the Hebrew language version of the alphabet game. And all of this stuff that people who just think we run around using the keys of Solomon are completely missing both of those facts and alchemy. That are all that are the three pillars of Hermeticism in many ways, but that's also the reductionism of calling Hermetic ceremonial magicians. That's reductionist and ultimately anti-tradition against Hermetics. So, because you're essentially calling us third graders, because someone who's a ceremonial magician would be a third grader in Hermeticism, not a college graduate.
Okay.
Because you are not realizing the thousands of books that are Hermetic Arcana. Because you're realizing, look at the pretty wands in the Key of Solomon. That must be what those guys do. We haven't done that for a long time. And even in that time, have you actually read Agrippa? Agrippa has all these weird charts in Hebrew.
I'm at a weird point with knowledge at this particular point in time. But I certainly understand. I've been through that. I've experienced it both in a positive and a negative way. And now that I'm in my mid-60s, the realization dawns on me that even if I reread everything at a fast pace, there's not enough life left for me to refamiliarize myself with all the lore that I've acquired. And that is a very deep meditation to ponder.
That's Zen mind, beginner's mind. That when I moved into this building, I had lost a dozen years of Enochian work in a single day. And when I moved into this current building, both of the girls on my floor were different kinds of witches.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I have a conversation with both of them, because they both try to, they both in a very cute way try to explain witchcraft to me, and I have to go, like, my warning label says former employee of the Reverend of Zombies. See the big neon sign above me? And so then when I moved into, what?
And where did it go from there?
Well, one of the girls actually worshipped Hecate and actually had done a food offering to Hecate literally the day before I moved in.
Mm-hmm.
Because Hecate, she's one of those people who worships Hecate and Isis.
Yeah, that's very common.
That's common now. That's a young thing. That was not common in 1986. In 1986, those two religions did not get along. In fact, I didn't see that even begin to be peaceful till 1998. Because in New Orleans, I start to see, like, the people who worship Isis, the people who worship the Morrigan, and the people who worship Hecate all start to do stuff together.
Mm-hmm.
The ones who aren't Wiccan. Wiccans are in Salem. They don't really like being in New Orleans. We make them uncomfortable, especially with, like, no, we have to go kill. We have to go hang out with the voodoo people and kill chickens today. Come on. What? It's Monday.
Yeah, I can see that upsetting.
Yeah. But when I moved in here, because I was dealing with witches, I had to restock some of my books on that to be like, well, no, correctly, it's this. No, correctly, it's this. No, I'm not a witch. I'm a doctor. Like, well, what's the difference? I'm like, ours is a 5-year program with an oath every year. Doctor's a tough program because it's sort of the New Orleans, they sort of rewrote the oath from being a voodoo priest to make them Rosicrucian friendly in the 20s or something, or in the 1820s, maybe. Maybe that was before Marie Laveau. That's possible, too. But so I get into that with them, and then one of Hearthwitch's things about dealing with magical burnout is switch it up. Learn something you've never done before. She actually was just talking about this on her live stream the other day, and this time around when she talks about burnout, she's like, no, watch movies, play in the woods, play Dungeons and Dragons. Like, uh-huh. So I switched it up, and when I moved in here, I dove more into my witchery, which I haven't really done since I worked at Reverend Zombies, and that wasn't witchery. That was hoodoo. And that was good because that allowed me to flex those muscles for the first time in a long time. And then the TikTok crisis happened, and I was dragged in under a clause in my doctor oath to be disinformation police on YouTube. So.
And that I know that you've been very diligent in.
Those are the girls who haven't retired are wonderful girls, and it's very interesting to watch their synchronicities and how that all interconnects. And it's interesting because my label has never been witch. Because I am everybody's other in the world of magic. Being a child of Akate and a Thelemite and a Rosicrucian and a doctor, there's something about me that offends everyone.
Okay.
You're not going to like what I have to say, but it's going to be the truth, so deal. So that's how I got over that. And that indirectly led to me starting to... The Witch of Wonderlust was doing, like, she never does book reviews. At a certain point when I started keeping an eye on her, she started posting these book reviews. And so I would just buy the books to keep up on witchy thought. And in many ways, that's where my modern witchcraft reading list came from. The core of that reading list are the books. She's like, no, buy this.
Uh-huh.
And so that started. But that's how you do that. I mean, I have to think about what I want to teach the younger people and not so much like rereading True and Faithful Relationship between John Dee and some spirits. Right now, that is not pertinent to what I'm doing for other people. So it's a book I've read, and it's a book I read a long time ago, but it doesn't help me with my day-to-day practice.
Right. Yeah, we're here trying to make things more accessible, information more accessible, using the fact that we live in a multimedia world that kind of eliminates space and time to pass on useful information for those seeking this information.
Right.
Like for instance... we're at a step now where we're building virtual temples. So we're starting with the Purna Teru temple, and we're starting with the Maitreya for Kibel. So those have been announced, and they're in the works. They should be up and running this quarter. And I'm reopening the Temple of Hercules and Athena. So we're starting now with like the temples and communicating from the temples and sharing information from the temples. And the next step after that's the Athenaeum. So that's being worked on as well. So these are all ways of delivering information information that is clear, simple, and useful for people living today.
Right.
Yeah, And the information age allows us to do that. There's so much information out there now that now it isn't there.
Yeah, but disinformation and misinformation.
Yes, that's very
as
true.
As always in the world of magic and paganism, half of it's a lie, which is how I got talked into doing this YouTube thing in the first place. Because my friend who talked me into it basically started with, basically, she sent me into YouTube, and she's like, just spend the weekend watching stuff about Hecate. Knowing just how angry I was going to be Monday night. Knowing just how much I was going to say, would you believe? Like, yep, see, that's the problem. Oh, okay.
Well,
that's an easy button to press because everybody lies about Mom. Everybody lies about her anyway.
But like you just said, that's been true since the dawn of time, the misinformation. Going through like mythology too, there's so much information and misinformation in the myths. And even the misinformation, you can get use out of it on some level, on a psychological level or a social level. So even the glaring falsehoods do some good if you find the right way to approach them.
That's the most important thing is like the Irish Pagan School actually has set up a reading list, and all of their setup is based on taking you to the original sources so you know the truth.
Right.
So that
The original sources contain what people were doing then, which much of which is no longer palpable for people living now.
That's where we have to, you know, innovate and modernize.
Right, and that's always the problem I've had with Reconstructionism, in that they'll attack people for not sticking with certain things, but the certain things they stick to are cherry picked, and they leave out all the things that they don't like or that they don't feel comfortable with. So it's like
it's orthodoxy and orthopraxy.
Right.
But the whole problem with Reconstructionism is it's a horrible Frankenstein of those two. In any Reconstructionist, we're not just talking about Greek. It's true. It's just as true with Irish Reconstructionism and Norse Reconstructionism. It is generally true about the cherry picking, and it is generally true about the orthodoxy too.
Mm-hmm.
One of our famously got kicked off of that list, even though I was a vote away from being an elder by saying I worked at Reverend Zombies.
You get a lot of
all of those fun Yahoo messages I never got to read to you. Oh, the fun week that was when I met you.
Yeah, I remember the Yahoo conversations and seldom visible.
Well, my whole attitude about that is, but isn't Hecate the goddess of witchcraft and magic? Wouldn't me working at Reverend Zombies be a good thing? Wouldn't that have been great on-the-job training for the goddess of magic?
You see that, and I see that, but a lot of people don't see it.
Because it's taboo. It's voodoo. It's evil. Like chaos magic, it's evil. Like Aleister Crowley is evil. Yeah, but that's the whole problem with orthodoxy and orthopraxy, and that's one of the whole issues about being more gnosis-centered as we try to, and functionally being more like Santeria and the Irish Pagan School, being more functionally based on knowing your history and that information, but getting rid of that disgusting, unusual personal gnosis thought that they use to disregard what the gods are actually saying in all forms of Reconstructionism, and understanding that that is an unusual personal gnosis, that's experience.
Mm-hmm.
Someone's experience with Hercules or Hecate is their experience.
Their experience, right. And it can vary
like
from other
a
fields.
A long time
experience.
Ago, when I first moved to Chicago, I bought here a bottle of $10 red wine.
Mm-hmm.
And because Hira doesn't get a whole lot of offerings, I pour it for her, she drinks it, and then she, a couple seconds later. And then she says, I know we don't do this very much, and I know you're probably not comfortable with giving me bubbles all the time, but how about the new rule is if it's good enough for your mother, it's good enough for me. Like, oh, okay, that makes sense for the Greek gods. That's cool. But that's my experience with Hera, that Hera being like, well, normally it's bubbles. You might not be into that, but not that again. you get a pass on that bottle this week, but let's not do that again.
Yeah, our experience of the powers is going to be different and unique, just like our experiences of each other are different and unique. And that's something that I found a lot of people don't get. It's like there's this version of whatever power you're attuned to, but unless you approach it in this particular way and unless you relate to it in this particular way, your experience isn't real.
Yeah, but especially with like the Greek and the Irish gods, they are very individual and very personal in their dealings with us mortals.
Correct.
So it's very, like my girl next door when I moved into this building, she starts with Hecate as the goddess of witchcraft. Like, yeah, that's normal for someone your age. That's okay. So how do you dualize her in Isis? If the god takes the cause of witchcraft, what does Isis do? And it becomes, and her polarization was full moon, new moon, light and dark goddess, was how she understood that.
And again,
because I would think they would be redundant. I would think Hecate and Isis would be redundant because I think they have pretty much similar jobs in different cultures.
So they work in the same department.
Isis originally was the goddess of magic before she mm-hmm. became the goddess of everything. Like Hecate was the goddess of midwives and storms, something like that, before she became the goddess of everything.
Well, Hercules, in addition to covering strength and heroic endeavor, he also covered, commerce and a bunch of other things. Even he was considered a doctor in the first centuries. He was more of a doctor than Asclepius was and had more temples than Asclepius. And he became syncretized into St. Luke, which somebody wrote with graffiti on one of his temples. Oh, what sorry days I'm experiencing. I'm now St. Luke. So the guises and even the job description changes from culture to culture, and sometimes they're separate beings, sometimes they blend into other gods, and this is on popular culture. It's like in Marvel Comics mythology, which I've been looking into in greater depth recently, and it amazes me the complexity of the information that they've woven together during the course of their existence puts the secret doctrine to shame. They cover very many of the same things and the same characters, but there's all sorts of new stories, and they have their own interpretation.
I've been playing with the animal a different direction because I was trying to find a Wonder Woman hardcover that covered a lot of either the 60s Wonder Woman and Circe stuff or the 80s Wonder Woman and Circe stuff, and I can't find either. They're all mixed in with. They're all by issue number. They're not thematic. So
some of the older ones are thematic, and now they have it's cheaper to print, so they're putting things together in like 500 page omnibuses. There was a weird Hercules thread that tied into the Eternals and like some other stuff, and I sent away for the book. It was inexpensive compared to how much these things used to cost when they were rarer.
Yeah, they're
again,
like $10 each. They're real price.
Yes, and there's like 500 pages I need to wade through to get probably maybe 20
six
panels.
Pages of information. One page with a picture.
Right. When I was researching the how the Imperium is popping up in popular culture, and I was looking at the Image comic Savage Dragon that has Hercules in it, too. They had an interesting interpretation of Hercules and the gods. And again, it was superficially it made sense as an explanation, but it was profound in the amount of occult information it contained.
That's one of the things that drives witches crazy, because sometimes I open a book and they're like, what are you looking for? And I'm like, I'll know it when I find it.
Yes, that's exactly what it is.
What? I don't know. It's in here somewhere. Where the hell is it?
And it says the same thing in Marvel and does an Image that it said in DC, wherever it's been popping up. And it's, of course, it's been a theosophy since the inception of theosophy. And before then, it's been behind such things as the Pleroma and the Empyrean and, you know, all these like concepts in Gnosticism. But the place is very well, even though like some of the details vary, the place is recognizable wherever it pops up in our collective imagination. And the fact that it's popping up now is very significant, although I don't quite know why. But
especially since you and I both have our magic horns again.
Yeah, that's the wave I'm riding right now. And it's been an interesting surfing void so far, or surfing experience so far.
Well, because we now are at the cusp of everything beginning again, especially once we get to next Halloween and survive this election.
Yeah, that ride continues for all of us as well, and there's a lot to think about there, a lot to contemplate, and a lot to reflect upon. Because of
theology. But back to our topic. Well, no, but that's the thing about both Ulm and the runes as both divination and initiatory systems.
Uh-huh.
Well,
I was a rune instructor for decades, so the runes I am familiar with. And yes, they're not, a lot of people misinterpret the runes, like Fehu, the first rune, which means a livestock or money, or that's where we get the word fee from. It actually means mastering money. So each of the runes is a door into a realm of experience that is not primitive. It's pretty much universal, although it manifests in different ways. So in the journey to becoming an Erilaz, you're not asked to draw letters and extract fuzzy metaphysical meanings from them, although you can do that as well. But it's mastering certain aspects of your life, and you can't have mastered Fehu unless all your finances are in order and you're rich. So each rune presents a challenge that is much larger than any rune book that I've ever read conveys. And if you read the original material from whence we know the runes, the sagas and so forth, in the sagas, even Egil Skallagrimson treated the runes with the greatest respect. And now we don't. You know, they're on cards, they're on tiles, they're on bones that people have etched them on, but they don't represent the power of the runes. They don't respect the power of the runes like the ancients did. For the most
part. And that would give us a system. That would give us a system of 20 some levels, like the Hebrew alphabet, and like the Ulm, and like all the other alphabets.
Mm-hmm.
Because you would have to master the lesson of each of the runes by the way they're organized and all that stuff.
Right, and the way they manifest in your actual life.
Right.
And you'll know you mastered the rune when that area of your life is basically something that you've mastered.
And that's the real pagan path. And that's also one of the problems with the Reconstructionists trying to sanitize it in the way they do.
There's a place for that. Again, it's in the popular culture. It seizes the imagination. People speculate on it. And I've always seen that type of thing as like the bait on the hook, because some people will become curious as to what's behind all this, and then they'll pursue it, you know, and that's when the fool's journey begins, you know, to all different levels. And in bodybuilding, for instance, certain exercises are likely to produce certain results. It doesn't mean they'll produce them all the time. It doesn't mean they'll produce them in you. But according to the wisdom of those who have tried to build the bodies in the past, these are the things you do. Some people don't want people to know how they got where they got, so they'll lie about how they got there. Arnold was notorious.
Well, it's the same way with ritual magic.
Right.
That everything from 100 years ago, all of the Golden Dawn and all of Crowley, people have been using for 100 years, so we know what all that stuff does and doesn't do. Mm-hmm. And it's all been in print, and people have been talking about it for 100 years. So none of that is secret anymore.
Right.
But the same thing happens. Don't do that ritual by Crowley. That's evil.
Yes, yes. And that's the way it's always been. And you have people who know the popular culture and people who know the occult speculations and practices behind some of the pop culture. The theosophists of old...
That's why occult means hidden.
Yes, they labeled everything esoteric and exoteric. So exoteric is what people did. And then esoteric is, do you know what that really means? Let me show you, you know, beyond the festivals and the holy days and the offerings and rules for living and things like that, there's something much deeper. And even on a practical level, the stories contained information on navigating to certain places, you know, for reasons that, you know, unless you're a Phoenician or somebody of a high level, you wouldn't really even know about. So again, that process, I think, has been there for a very long time. And there's always been people like straddling the process or aware of the process and have a perspective on the process where it becomes something practical and you can see why things are the way they are. And you learn from your experiences that even though it says to do this, not to do it. I'll give you an example. Again, it's not an occult example, but it's maybe something that people can identify with. I've shared this story like a million times. I love lifting weights and producing like a sword and sandal physique, let's call it. You know, it was whole physical culture mm-hmm. back then. And there's all sorts of ways that you can get there. Some of them like overlap. Some of them are wacky and won't take you anywhere. But still, people do them. So I don't want to take steroids. I've never taken steroids except when the doctor prescribed them for my back arthritis in my back. And other things that doctors have prescribed them. But I never wanted to take steroids to build a body. And I don't want to go the full-blown bodybuilder's path of today where people don't even look human anymore. I want the classical aesthetic. So I researched what people were doing in the days before steroids were popular. And I found that people there claimed to drink like a gallon of milk a day and eat 6 oranges. That's from 2 different systems of getting there. So I did. I started drinking a gallon of milk a day, even though I was lactose intolerant. It took me a good year to build up the resistance to it, and 6 oranges a day. And it worked like a charm. I had bigger muscles than I'd had in a very long time, and I was super strong, and I was very happy. Until the day I wasn't, and it didn't. So I started falling down stairs first, and then all those muscles I laboriously built, I lost because the amount of sugar that I was consuming by drinking a gallon of milk and 6 oranges a day was tremendous and much more than my body could handle. So I think that pushed me over the edge into diabetes. So it's the same thing with a lot of – that's how I view all of these techniques and systems and so forth. They were designed by people for...
Well, there's a certain point in any hermetic ritual where you are tolerant, like you're drug tolerant, where that ritual just isn't going to work for you anymore because you can't take any more energy from that ritual.
Right. And it's similar whether you're doing a magical ritual or you're doing a bodybuilding ritual. If you've done any type of system to get certain results, or better yet, if you've done more than one type of system to get better results, you gain the perspective and the mindset where you get to see systems for what they truly are, you know, and to realize that sometimes it'll work really well, sometimes it won't work at all, sometimes because you're doing everything right, but it's bullshit. Other times because you're not doing everything right, you need to learn how to do it right. So it's always a journey, regardless which path you go down. And if you have your goal in mind, it becomes a lot easier to make use of the systems, because then it's like, does it work or doesn't it work for me right now?
Right. Like, part of me doing Runes at Ohm was also Hearthwitch. When I was trying to play in my mind about which one do I want to teach, she did this thing on divination where she says they're the same, but they're different.
Right.
She does them as a single chapter in a single episode, and I'm like, okay. That was my perspective, kinda. I'm going to agree with her on this one. They're the same but different, and it's better to know both. It's more educational to know both, and then you know two systems of divination. Because very few people are going, most people have a primary system of divination, whatever it is.
Mine is synchronicities, and then dreams. Those are my two primary. And then I'll fiddle with other types of divination systems, like I did with the runes for over a decade, because at the time I was investigating Hesperian and Hyperborean mysteries. We met during that phase of my explorations. So I used those. And now, because I never really got into the tarot, I still can't really get into the tarot, but I can use the tarot cards to enhance ways that I'm familiar with and get a lot of mileage from. So I'm finding that I can use the tarot cards in a unique way. And some decks, with me, it's a symbolism. So if the cards speak the journey I take will be more meaningful. So rather than
struggling... That's the way it is with all people in all tarot decks. It's part of why I've been... I pretty much only read other people with my Crowley deck.
Mm-hmm.
I can do whatever I want for myself.
Right.
But if there are other eyes on me, I use the Crowley deck because I'm so thoroughly immersed in it and its symbolism after using it for 30 years and a bunch of those years professionally on Jackson Square that I can knock out a reading with my Thoth deck in 15 minutes.
That is awesome.
Like, no, it's this, 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 it's this. Questions? Whereas I can do runes and I can do Ohm, but I have to have the book, and I'm still vaguely uncomfortable with both of those. I recently got back into doing magpie readings again because that's useful for a different sphere of reality than other divination methods, because magpie is basically bones that aren't bones.
Okay, you've spoken highly of that book.
Well, because people think bones are icky and cowrie shells take a long time to learn how to read, magpie readings have come into 21st century witchcraft, and then there are a number of the textbooks I'm using for the class about how. But the first time I get my magpie read, it is by my friend who ultimately works at Marie Laveau's. And she basically says it's all this stuff in my mojo bag, fairy items that are dead, that are dried out. It doesn't have any more fairy mojo, so it ends up in the magpie until it gets lost. Until it's not in the magpie anymore.
I started studying a deck called Cosmic Dreamer Oracle Cards. And the imagery, again, spoke to me because I looked through various decks to try to find something that speaks to me. So, some of them were really good. Some of them were very evocative. But this one, at this point in time, spoke to me the most. So I've been learning each card by basically looking at the picture, seeing what they labeled it, and then seeing what that produces in me. So I'm almost finished with exploring every single card. And next I'm going to try using it by picking a card a day and seeing how it relates to what's going on.
That's the best way to learn any divination system is to draw a card before you drink your coffee.
Okay. I did not know that, but now I do.
Well, no, that's the thing about the two times to do magic is your morning session where you're programming your day is when you do your heavy lifting. But you do that like you light your candle and you get ready and then you shoot your coffee so your coffee hits you while you're doing the magic.
Okay.
And the night session tends to be more meditative.
I should do weights then first thing in the morning and then drink coffee to get everything going.
If that works for you, yeah. That's how it was taught to all of us in the 80s. All of us in New Orleans 7 were basically told, like, no, you wake up, you notate your dream because you're probably not able to write in sentences yet. Even though you're a hermetic wizard, you're probably not completely verbal till you've had your second cup of coffee. That's okay. We know that. We've been doing this for thousands of years. We know you're not really going to be able to put that in paragraphs just yet. Do your morning ritual, have your second cup of coffee, write your dream down while you're listening to the news. That's fine. We've been doing that forever. It's fine.
Ask
your question. Well, and then your night session tends to be more meditative because you're pulling in to go back into dream.
Okay,
unless you're in the process of one of those rituals where you need to do the ritual like 3 or 5 or 8 times a day. Unless you're in the process of one of the endurance rituals, in which case you're stuck with doing that.
Yeah, I find that immersion helps. So repetition helps. And anybody can prove themselves to them by binge watching a TV show if you work with your dreams. Within days, the characters and the situations from the TV show will weave themselves into concerns you have in your life and other types of things that you experience in dreams. That's a very interesting phenomenon. And I find it's predictable, at least for me. So if I want to dream about something, if I want to incubate my dreams, I'll just watch a lot of movies or YouTube clips or read books or comics or whatever deals with a topic that I'm interested in. And within a very short period of time, that topic is there in my dreams. So.
Yeah, because that's the energy you're attracting. That's what you're evoking.
Now, one of the things I found is that the universe has like a sense of humor sometimes. So some things are like obviously like the intent was understood, but the answer was not what was expected.
You don't always get what you want. You get what you need.
Yeah, I remember this is the most dramatic thing I could think of.
As a wiser man once said.
This was one of the more dramatic ones that I share. There have been more dramatic ones that I don't share, but this one I share pretty often. I once needed money to come into my life to do the things that I was doing. And I thought that, the added resources were definitely needed. And I was doing this to serve my greater purpose and all this other stuff. But I didn't want to keep wrestling with like funding things and monetizing them and, you know, figuring out how to monetize them and so forth. So I felt that I'd get an answer, and I did. Within a day, I started finding and people started giving me play money, the one that looks like real money, but it's actually like fake money. $1 million bills.
Yeah.
So within a couple of weeks, I'd accumulated a whole big stack. I still have it of fake $1 million bills. So the universe clearly heard me, because that doesn't happen ever, or at least it hadn't happened to me. And it answered, and it answered dramatically and emphatically, but it wasn't the result that I sought. And it was not that I didn't word it right or anything, but that's the response that I got. So I went back to using my creativity to figure out how to do these things. And I did do them. You know, ultimately, eventually, I didn't need the millions of dollars.
When my friend from Marie Laveau's used one of the mercury talismans from the Greater Key and bought a metal one and charged it and made special incense and did a whole ritual, the necklace famously attracts coins.
Right.
And when I did her reading about that, I'm like, this isn't going to work the way you think it is. I would not. I'm trying to talk you out of it. I'm doing my best to talk you out of it, but you're not going to listen to me. So she does it, and it's around this time of year. She fires it off the full moon right before Carnival. And so people start. Captain Morgan used to make little coins that were worth a drink each.
Uh-huh.
She basically ended up with like 500 gold in Captain Morgan coins.
It sounds like the same department that answered my entreaty.
I'm like, you should have just asked Tecate. You should have just called my mother. You should have just written Mom a letter. Mom's not going to do you the way you just got done. Yeah, it was the same thing. It was like, yeah, it attracted gold coins, but you haven't done the Ebermalum. So that's famously what happens if you use the magic in that book if you haven't done the book.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, it didn't work. I'm like, yeah, it did. It did work. She just manifested leprechaun gold.
And
we just raided the rummy the leprechauns of rum just dumped us their cauldron.
But it is an answered prayer to look at it from that perspective, and it shows you very definitively that someone is listening, and someone has the agency to make things happen on the physical plane. So it does teach you that, even though the result isn't what you wanted or expected.
It's true, but that's also the problem with going to the universe directly rather than going through a tutelary spirit or God who understands cosmic finance.
Now, I found that magical alphabets, whether it's the runes, ancient Greek letters, ancient Hebrew letters, Elvish by Tolkien or Klingon by Star Trek. It's kind of like putting on the costume and creating an atmosphere. It enhances the suspension of disbelief or the refocusing.
That's why they're called magical languages. That's why they're called magical languages, because English is good for everything but that.
Mm-hmm.
English is the least magical of all languages, but it's the language of Shakespeare. But yeah, it's very, that's called magical language. And that is like why Harry Potter, they use Latin almost all the time in Harry Potter, except when they don't.
Right.
But no, it's the idea of magical languages is like some people only do magic in Gaelic. Some people only do magic in Icelandic. Some people only do magic in hieroglyphic. Because that is part of the magical personality and helps you get into the trance faster and disassociate from your mundane self.
Right. It's part of what creates the alternate reality. And I remember I was involved in Star Trek fandom for a while also. I was doing mythical things in that science fiction universe. And I found that even though you didn't need to wear a costume and you didn't need to have props and you didn't need to like set up the Klingon meeting in a Klingon meeting way where it evoked the world that Star Trek created for Klingons. But it helped tremendously you know, people were able to get into the roles and assume them, and the whole experience made the attempt very immersive and much more powerful. So if the same words had been said without all the props,
see, that's exactly what the Reconstructionists were trying to do. They're just doing it in their way.
Mm-hmm.
They're just trying to role play Athenian Athens. In their cherry picking way,
which is fine, but then don't believe that everybody should do it that way. That becomes as ridiculous as I remember when we were doing the Star Trek. Klingons, especially, were known for this. That other people weren't quote unquote real Klingons, and you see it in the Republican label of Rhino. You know, where someone's a Republican in name only. We're the real thing. You know, we're the real. Whatever label you want to put on yourself to differentiate you from other people. And I saw that in what was essentially a LARP, a religious LARP. I saw that in the LARP all the time, that if you didn't observe the right calendar, or if you didn't read and apply the writings in this particular obscure book, then you weren't the real.
Well, long before I met you in New Orleans, because Queen Maeve and I were both former Helenon types.
Uh-huh.
She and I get in this conversation about like the Roman calendar versus, and I'm like, which Greek calendar?
Right.
And because we were having this conversation in public, are we buying someone's calendar and saying that's legit? What is a legit calendar in Rome and Greece? What? How do we do that? So as a result of that conversation, the idea came up of calendar stupid. Like moving
okay.
Hercules' major festival from that busy middle of August to 8-8. Be like, nah, 8-8 makes sense for Hercules. That'll work. If people ask, we're just calendar stupid, we're not Reconstructionists. We're in New Orleans.
Well,
we're not really paying attention to that.
8-8 works because it's the Lionsgate portal. And again, it doesn't have
to be because there are like five holidays that weekend on the Roman calendar.
Right.
We really had to like split them up throughout the month. And this is always the issue Hecate and Diana get into. They both think they own the middle of August when neither of those deities are native to Rome anyway.
Yeah,
Hercules has a better claim at being the native god than Hecate or Diana do.
I always saw these types of things being like a dating book. You know, if you want to date the god, this is what colors the god likes or the goddess. This is the days of the week they're free for dates, you know, and stuff like that. Or, you know, these are the holidays, Valentine's Day, and on Valentine's Day you do this.
Well,
on
that topic, when the Morrigan and I had our weird multidimensional Christmas episode, one of the things she realizes after she sticks her hand in my heart is she turns around and looks at her at my altar for her and realizes everything on my altar for her is almost consistent in every universe where Octung Baby and 9/11 happened. Throughout all of it, it's consistent. My Hecate is not consistent, apparently. That was an interesting piece of information. But, yeah, it's that my Morrigan altar is completely consistent within my personality.
Uh-huh.
Which is interesting considering how long it took me to find a statue I liked. Because it took me almost 6 months to find the statue for that altar.
That is a wonderful topic for another episode, because this one we're approaching the end. We have six more minutes. What thoughts would you like to leave people with about this topic of magical alphabets and other devices that help strengthen one's spiritual journey?
It's better to know everything than nothing.
I like
it's
that.
Better to play with them. It's like musical instruments and martial art. Better to at least try to play 8 musical instruments and be stuck with guitar or harmonica than have never tried to play the violin. in all things magic, you're better off trying things and failing than you are deciding you aren't going to be good at that.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the world of magic, you don't know till you know.
And that makes sense until you know. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I like that.
If you know what I'm talking about, that sentence wasn't nonsense. That sentence was wisdom.
You have a book here, the Magical Quotes of Serpentis Satori, where you could write these magical koans in there.
Eventually when this is all collated into a book, I'm sure there is going to be a book like The Wisdom of Dune that's going to have all of my one-liners in it.
And that's not an impossibility. 5 years of conversations with the theurgists led to the book, and it's still going through the process of becoming a reality, and hopefully it'll be out this year. But it's over 200 pages.
The title for this show came from someone dreaming about reading it in a book.
Oh, wow. Okay, there we go.
Because she was like, no, what are the blue books next to Crowley? Oh. I'm like, uh-huh. Because she has that dream and passes that on to me, and then you're like, well, now you need a title for your show. I'm like, and now the serpent eats its own tail. The universe told me what I'm supposed to do because this is what it is. But that's a vase in the matrix thing.
Yeah, synchronistically, the Matrix is the first book that I contributed to occult-wise this time around was a book that dealt with Philip K. Dick and the Matrix and all that type of thing. And that's what got me back into authorhood and so forth.
But that's the advice, that you're better off trying runes and ohm and tarot and... I've never actually seen people do divination with the Theban alphabet or any of some of those others. I've never actually seen Theban runes. That might be a thing. I just maybe have never seen it.
I've seen them, but I've never seen anybody work with them. I was considering playing with them because they're called Theban, and that's an Egyptian Greek thing, you know, just to see if that might not have anything to do with anything. Thank you, Satori. You're awesome. I enjoy our conversations, both on the air and off the air. I wish you success with all your endeavors. I'm going to invite you. 90 seconds. I'm going to invite you to participate in some of the things that I'm doing if you have the time or the inclination to participate. Be well, my friend. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye.
And be well, all listeners who tuned into the episode, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, whether you called and you're in our queue, or whether you're going to listen to the show later on. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures and happy and healthy new year. Good night, everyone.